Welcome, everybody, to the Hockey Toolkit. This interview we have today with us is Brian Gillum of Ottawa, Ontario. Brian is the head of Brian Gillum Hockey. He's the coach development coordinator for Set Hockey Eastern Ontario. Is that what the HEO stands for?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. He's also a Hockey Canada skills coach and GMP coach mentor. So for Hockey Eastern Ontario. So thanks, Brian, for joining us. And like I said, how's everything going on up there for you?
It's going real well. It's slowing down. Nice to be here. Thanks for the invite, guys. But yeah, hockey's winding down now. So I'm starting to be able to kick my feet up a little bit and lean back and relax. Things will pick back up again shortly, for sure. We've got a lot of, especially around my role with Hockey Eastern Ontario, we've got some fairly large coach development initiatives coming up that I'll be involved with my colleague at Hockey Eastern Ontario. But yeah, for a little bit of time, I've got some relaxation and free time that I don't know what to do with. You know, if I can't be in a rink, I don't know really what to do with my time. And then my wife starts getting frustrated that I'm around the house and under her feet. And she wants me out in the rink. So, but no, all good. Things are going well.
And then here we are, us jackals who are talking hockey with you, making you talk about hockey while you're trying to take your break. So we do appreciate you joining us.
I like chatting hockey.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a little bit of a background about yourself, you know, just within the game, and you know, and then we'll kind of kick off the you know, the big topics. Not that you're not a big topic, but
Well, thank you very much, but that might be a little bit over the top. So but I'm flattered. My name is Brian Gillum. As you said in the intro, I'm the coaching development coordinator with Hockey Eastern Ontario. For those that don't know, Hockey Eastern Ontario is a member partner branch of Hockey Canada. Hockey Canada is much like Hockey USA, has, you know, regional branch member partners across the country. For the most part, they're provincial branches. Here in Ontario, we have three provinces broken into three branches, and we're one of them. So I have that role. Also own my own company, Brian Gillum Hockey, where I work privately in player development, coach development, kind of, you know, because of my role with HEO and Hockey Canada, it allows me to work through them and then through my company to bring coach development out to those that want it or need it, whether it's Hockey Canada coach education or custom coach education, can deliver both. I've been in and around the game for I think this is 39 years. It'll be 40 coming up next season. And that's a variety of capacities, mostly coaching, but I'm a former physical education teacher. So in my prior role, I coached a lot of high school hockey. The province I was teaching in, high school hockey, like in Minnesota, was very big, probably in some regards bigger than minor hockey and youth hockey. I've worked in administration in hockey and sport, but yeah, I've been around the game for a long, long time. That's about it. You know, what I do now mostly is working in player and coach development. I haven't coached in a couple of years, kind of pulled back from that to devote more time to specific player and coach development. And what I thought was, it would free my time up. It actually hasn't. It's made me more busy than I was, but it's a good busy. I enjoy doing it. So
that's awesome.
You know, Brian, one of the things that I really, you know, and I did do a little bit of a dive into some of your YouTube stuff. And I love some of the videos on there because a lot of times, you know, with skills coaches, you know, not to label you with that broad brush, but skills coaches, they do a lot of like, you know, things just for the Instagram or just for the YouTube. And it's a lot of like setup drills that are maybe not like stuff you would actually use in games. Whereas you're using a lot of game specific game clips and you're using stuff like puck protection and good positioning with your F3 and middle drive and all these really essential hockey components that every player needs at all levels that are really game transferable. Can you dive a little bit into what, you know, your philosophy is as a skills coach or a person who teaches skills to kids?
Yep. Well, I made a shift about 8 years ago. For the first 30, 31 years of my coaching, I viewed the skills of the game as skating, passing, shooting, puck handling, and then, checking skills, stick checking, that type of stuff. And then about 8 years ago, I got hooked on this theory, ecological dynamics. Started listening to some podcasts, doing some reading, and I just got really intrigued on hearing these people talk about this theory of motor learning, skill acquisition. And I started doing deeper dives, and what it ended up doing is it pulled me away from that traditional mindset of the skills of the game are skate, pass, shoot, stick, handle, into a mindset of the skills are the game. The skills of the game are contextual to the game, meaning they are decision-making qualities. Yes, they involve skating, passing, and shooting, but they go beyond that. They go be they take those techniques or technical elements into the game context, and how a player uses them, how they perceive the game environment, how they read and react. We call it read and react. In the skill actual acquisition world, they call it perceive and act, perception, action. So what you see, what you hear, what you feel, and then how you act on that information, that is what the skill of the game is in ecological dynamics. That pulled me away from working in that isolated, rote memory, rinse and repeat, 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 as the medicine to developing skill in a player. What it does is it develops technique in a player. It makes them a really good skater. It makes them a really good passer. It makes them a really good shooter. The question is, does it translate to the game to make them a better hockey player? The people in the ecological dynamics camp will say, no, it doesn't. People obviously in the other side of the camp will say, oh, it certainly does. Like, you've got to have that stuff, and it does translate. My position is not, it's not about battling whether one is right, one is wrong. It's just a position. It's a position I take that, and for a very, very long time, in the coaching I was doing, and even now in the observation that I do, I see a lot of really talented or technically proficient hockey players, great skaters, beautiful hands. Boy, they've got junior quality shots, but they're 14 years old. But when it comes to playing the game, solving the problems, using the right tool at the right time in the right place, they're not as effective. They're not, they look good. You can sit back and you go, wow, beautiful skater, nice hands, but not a really good player of the game. And that's kind of where ecological dynamics goes. It leans over to the side of the skill of the game is within the game. It's you don't train skills, you don't see skills in isolated context. You can really only see skill, develop skill within the context of the game. Now, when we talk about context of the game, we don't mean it has to be the exact game. Like, I use the example of playing frozen tag, right? Every player with a puck on their stick, one player doesn't have the puck, and that player has to skate around as fast as they can trying to tag people. When you get tagged, you're frozen. You have to stand still and stick handle, and someone who has a puck has to skate over and unfreeze you. That simple type of tag game is game contextual. Pressure, puck protection, skating with a puck in crowded space and areas, finding space, working in and out of. Like, there's a lot of things that transfer from the real game into that game. So when we talk about the context of the game and developing and training skill within the context, in ecological dynamics, we use a lot of activities that don't look anything like a game of hockey, but they bring out the elements of the game. And that's the big difference in, really what it gets down to, Andrew, is differentiating between what's known as linear theory and nonlinear theory. And ecological dynamics is on that nonlinear side, where it kind of says learning is not an A before B before C kind of event. Learning is very holistic. We can actually learn to skate and shoot and pass all at the same time, and we can do it holistically while playing a game. The linear approach is a little bit more formal in, no, you got to learn to skate first, and then you've got to learn to skate before you can handle a puck, and you kind of got to have some fundamentals before you can play the game. It's that more traditional kind of A before B before C. And that's really what differentiates those two camps, right? And that's where I work full time now. Like, started 8 years ago, and everything I do in my private business, everything I do in my coach education goes down that path. I'm trying to spread the word, I guess, on the merits of this approach, not in any way trying to denounce the other approach. It's just, this is the way I work. I've seen the merits. I've seen the benefits. There are some cons, like any approach to doing anything. There's pros and cons on both sides. But for me, it weighs way heavier on the value side and benefit side than what I was doing for 30 years.
Well, I love that answer. And, you know, this past season, you know, I've been a junior coach for a long time. This past season, we took over our youth program here in Laconia, New Hampshire. And now we have to do more of a lot of coaching the youth coaches. And, you know, there's a lot of volunteers and dads and kids that want to get into coaching. And they have a very fixed mindset, like a very mindset from what they learned maybe in the 80s or 90s growing up. And it's not the modern game. And, you know, they may be advocates and big hockey fans, be watching a lot of NHL games, but they're not really watching and seeing the modern game. One of the clips that I loved on YouTube is how you want to attack, you know, you're attacking the interior and driving the middle and attacking the middle of the ice. And, you know, we have a lot of coaches who are, you know, in our program, we had to kind of re-change their mindset because they would be, you know, get it up the wall, make a play off the boards, or, you know, enter the offensive zone from the outside, get an outside entry. And that's not the modern game. It's a challenging the D, pressuring the middle, and then opening up ice. And a lot of your clips included that kind of information. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in the modern game and how you try to implement those concepts in your practices and your teaching?
Yeah, it's, you know, the more, and like we've always talked about in the game of hockey, principles of play. We don't talk about them enough, I don't think. You know, in our Hockey Canada coach education, in several of the coaching levels, they come up. We talk about the principles of play are, you know, A, B, C, D. But we don't go deep enough into what they are and why they're so valuable. This shift I made 8 years ago to sort of using a constraints-led approach, non-linear approaches to coaching and player development also shifted the way I see the modern game. I now watch the game differently with this mindset of developing players than I did prior. Prior, I watched the game like most other people. I watched it as an ozone entry, as a patterned, structured event. I watched a power play as a 1-3-1, or I watched it as a box one, or I watched it as a swarm. Like, I was watching the game from the position of structure and patterning. When I watch the game now, the game is about space and principles. Like, I tell young players I work with and I tell coaches I work with, I'll often ask coaches in a clinic, you know, if I asked you, what is the game of hockey about? What would you say it is about fundamentally? You know, your top thing, what is it really about? And you get a wide range of answers. You know, some will say, well, it's all about skating and it's all about offense or defense or whatever. And I say to them, you know, fundamentally for me, the game is about space. The game of hockey is about space. And you can pretty much look at any team invasion sport, hockey, basketball, football, soccer, rugby, field hockey. They all predominantly are about when you are in possession of the object, it is about creating space and using it to your advantage. When you don't have possession of the object, it's about limiting or taking away the space of the team that has it. So in hockey, when you have the puck, you want to make space, create space, use it, attack it, When you don't have the puck, you want to limit it and constrain the opponent from having it. Fundamentally, the game starts and ends with space. It's all about space. So now in order to create space, attack space, use it, make an opponent vulnerable or take it away, you now have to be very good at understanding the principles of the game. How to create pressure. Create pressure with your speed, your positioning, your stick, your angling when on defense. When you have the puck, create pressure by attacking the middle and kicking out and opening space up so that now you get different routes of attack. You push the defense back so you can create layers of attack in the game. So now when I watch the modern game, I see it more from a principal perspective than I ever saw it before. Yeah, I still see, that was a nice cycle, or, nice 2-on-1 out of the corner, or wow, Tampa's 1-3-1 is really effective. And I still see it that way. But now I start to look deeper, and I'm now watching what happens in the game from the principal perspective. Like, what is it about Tampa's 1-3-1? And it's not that it's a 1-3-1. It's about it being a 1-3-1 that is in constant motion. They move, they switch, they rotate. The puck is traveling. Players are traveling. So what does that do? Pressure extends possession. They use support. Those are all principles of the game. Yeah, they have a basic shape that they use, but really their effectiveness is based on how well they play to those principles of generate pressure through possession, through support, so that we can attack and score using that power play shape or whatever it is we use. So, like, for me, that has been the big thing. And a part of that, Andrew, has also come out of this shift to ecological dynamics. Because one of the other things that happens when you work this way, when you work inside that theory and you use nonlinear approaches like a constraints-led approach, you have to pull back from being prescriptive as a coach. You have to start pulling back from telling your players, do A, then B, you stand here, you go there. And you have to start getting comfortable as a coach to give your players more freedom to explore and discover solutions to problems in the game through your guidance and through your design of the activities and practice drills. And that's where the CLA comes in, is how you manipulate the constraints within your drills and activities. But, and then, as you start to shift and pull back from prescription, you now open up that whole world for your players to explore. And now they themselves will start to experience support, space, pressure, what worked, what doesn't work, why did it work, why did it not work? But now you can get into that line of questioning with players to discover with them and guide them, tweak a constraint, shrink the space, add a player, take a player out, start the position of the drill differently, start it off a face-off, start it off a rim. You keep playing with those informational constraints so that the problem never really changes, but the perceptions that the players pick up are always changing. And because of that, they're going to act differently. They're going to come up with different solutions for the same recurring problems over and over and over and over, right? So instead of teaching players, hey, when you're jammed up on the wall and you don't have any good options, do a cycle. Your solution is a cycle. Well, in my approach, I never tell them that. I tell them, when you're jammed up on the wall, what do we need to do? And some kid will say, well, we got to get support. We got to move because movement creates space. Well, what do we do when we create space? Someone's got to fill it. As you're filling space, what do? You communicate. So now I've got them playing the principles, and out of that might come a cycle. Out of that might come a low to high. It might be a high to low. It might be a cutback with a drive back down the wall. I'm now affording my players the opportunity to discover solutions to problems that fit their abilities, rather than me saying, no. In this situation, you do a cycle. I want them to do a cycle if it's the best idea, I want them to do a cycle if they're afforded the opportunity to do a cycle. But there's 100 other things they could do other than a cycle. So that's where, like, that's where all of that starts to connect together of sort of the modern game, the level of skillfulness that we now see, those top end players, their ability to play to principles, and then what these methodologies do, I feel, to bolster that in our player development.
That's a phenomenal answer and really insightful, Brian. Thank you. Now, you know, you're in Canada. We're both U.S. guys. There's a huge emphasis on the ADM model. I don't know if you're familiar with that terminology.
Yeah, very.
You know, with the ADM model, it's very structured. It's very, you know, station-based practices for youth players. It's a lot of small area games, which a lot of those read and react scenarios like you're talking about, but a lot of the bulk of a practice would not be a read and react scenario. It would be a lot of like structured movements within a small space. You do a lot of organizational skill development. You know, that you have that on your website of organizational or team-based, you know, models. Can you speak to a little bit about the differences with maybe what your programs look like and what the ADM models, pros and cons, a little bit?
I actually think they might look very similar, to be honest with you, because, you know, when I don't know everything about the ADM. I've never worked inside of it, but I've got some colleagues that I stay in contact with in the U.S., who are affiliated with USA Hockey and work with them. So I've done some reading on it quite a bit. And, and for me, you know, the underlying premise to the ADM is shrink the space, scale the game according to the athlete, right? Like, five-year-old children should not be doing anything on a rink 200 by 85. Like, let's get over that, right? Like, and for all of the listeners out there, I apologize if you don't like this, but we need to stop having 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old little children playing on a surface that was built for adults that are 200 pounds. That has got to stop. And for anyone You're who preaching. Thinks it is good, anyone who, out there who thinks it is good for those kids, it is not good for those kids. And USA Hockey says it's not. Hockey Canada says it's not. Finland, Sweden, Czechia, all the hockey federations, IIHF, everybody has done the studies that says it is not good. So let's get past that argument and move on. So when I look at the ADM, it is designed to address that very fact, to make the game what we call scalable. I'll just a little offside about what they've done in Finland. Their version of the ADM in Finland has even gone way beyond what has happened in Hockey USA and Hockey Canada. They've taken the game down to 1/6. Like, they have 5-year-olds not playing on cross ice. They've got 5 and 6-year-olds playing on half of a zone. So imagine, you know, you take one end of the rink, divide it in half, the neutral zone, divide it in half. So you've got 6 pieces. Those are the playing surfaces for 5 and 6-year-olds in the Finnish model. And then it gets bigger at 7 and 8, bigger at 8 and 9, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So, you know, what the ADM does, and rightfully so, is it indirectly redefines the game for small children. It says small children need to play on small surfaces. They should be playing with small nets. They should be playing with smaller stuff. You know, Dr. Stephen Norris, that, you know, for a number of years, he worked with Hockey Canada. He always used to talk about, you never walk into an elementary school and walk into a kindergarten class and see the desks and chairs the same size as the desks and chairs of the grade 12 class. Because the kids in grade 12 are adult-sized people, and the kids in kindergarten are wee little children. So the desks are little tiny desks and little tiny chairs. Sports should be the same. I work from that same premise. And I have for a very long time clung to the belief that the game of hockey, although played, even at the NHL level, although played on a 200 by 85 foot surface, really is a game of small space. If you sit down and watch any game on television, it's over on one side of the offensive zone, then it moves to the other, then it breaks out and it's in the neutral zone for a little period of time, then it goes into the other zone, it's on one side, it's over on the other side, it's back to the other side, it comes out. It's constantly moving from small space to small space to small space to small space. And those small spaces are scattered around a large 200 by 85 foot rink. Everything I do is about developing the skill of the player to play in those small spaces. Because I believe if you can control a puck below the tops of the circles in a two-on-two scenario while moving, then if I ask you to take that puck and skate a straight line all the way to the other end of the rink, you'll be able to do that. I should not have to teach you how to do that. So I never, in any of the work I do, I never feel I have to teach young hockey players how to do anything that involves moving from one end of the rink to the other. What I do is I teach them, what are the skills you need to play in this area of the rink, this area of the rink, this small area, this small area? Because the movement from one area to the other is inherent. It's just move. It's like, oh my Lord, the puck is now over there. What should you do? Well, I don't need to train you to skate over to where the other puck is. Kids are just going to do that. So like the ADM, I am a small space coach because I believe that's where the skills of the game really exist.
That's a phenomenal answer. Thank you, Brian. Trevor, what do you got for Brian?
Yeah, listening to all this, and again, this is fantastic information. This is, I love hearing this because, again, it is a different, as you've said, it's a different way than coaches are typically, coaching right now. One of the things I got a question, though, is, you did say that we've got some area for, you're not fully like saying, oh, we can't work on technique here and there. So when would be the correct time to actually work on technique? In your opinion, is there a certain age? Is there a certain timing? Is there, there's all those different concepts and, little things that you had mentioned, in the freeze tag game. At what point, though, do we still want to work on, if we do, do we still want to work on those techniques?
Great question. And that is the single question that comes up most often when the debate starts between linear and sort of nonlinear discussions, right? Is, well, you've got to teach something in order for them to do, right? Here's the answer I always give. Can we not teach them to skate by letting them play fun games? Can we not let them learn how to stick handle by letting them play little fun games? Do we need to take pucks away, put cones on the ice, put them in lines, and have them push, glide? Do we have to go to that technical approach, the power skating approach? And again, I'm never, ever suggesting it's wrong and will not work. I just always ask the question now, and I never asked a question like this before. Can we not teach kids to skate other ways than that pure technical approach where it might not be very fun or exciting? It can be effective, but maybe not very fun. And I have a couple of examples I always use. You guys might be too young to fit into this example. I'm not.
I appreciate that. But
people in my age generation, for the most part, we grew up learning how to skate on frozen lakes and ponds and rivers. We didn't grow up learning how to skate with power skating coaches and skills coaches or even organized hockey. For the most part, you ask somebody my age and you say, where did you learn to play the game? And they'll say, on the lake behind my community. I was there every morning, every afternoon. When I wasn't in school, I was shoveling snow off the lake and playing shinny with my buddies. Somehow we learned to skate without anybody ever instructing us how to skate. I look at some of the programs here in Ottawa There's one in particular. It's called Learn to Skate. It's offered by the Ottawa Senators Development Programs. And every time I see the people who run that program on the ice, teaching young kids, little ankle biters, I call them, the ankles are turned in and they're hobbling along. And it's learn to skate. There's no sticks, there's no equipment. And every time I see them on the ice, I stop and I watch. And they're out there playing fun games with them. They've got all kinds of toys on the ice, and they're doing things like I saw the girl one night. She had all these like 4-inch foam letters true all around the rink. They're just letters on the ice everywhere. And kids were skating around picking up letters. And when she came off the ice, she said, "What were you doing there?" And she said, what they had to do was they had to go and find all of the letters that spelled their name. That's how she's teaching them to skate. Just go move. You're on skates, move, propel yourself, get along, and it will start to grow eventually, right? So I think sometimes, maybe in hockey, maybe other sports are the same way, I'm not sure. But I think sometimes in our sport, we get caught in feeling like there's a rush, that we've got to get kids up to speed quickly. You do not. You do not. Think of the lifespan of a child in youth hockey. They start at five, maybe it's four in the US, but organized minor hockey in Canada starts at 5 years old. And it goes all the way to U18, so 17 years old. So it's basically the lifespan of a child in school from kindergarten to grade 12. We don't rush our kids in school. Like, we don't have kids in grade three trying to learn biology or physics. We wait until they're in grade 11 or 12, right? Like, we allow them to work in an age-appropriate, ability appropriate medium, and then we move them along, move them along. There's no rush. They'll get there. They'll move along at their pace. But for some reason in hockey, we feel sometimes like, oh, I've got to get them, we got to get them skating. We've got to get the technique down, and we got to get that stride and extension. It's got to be just right. I beg the question. I ask the question, do we really need to be that rushed? Can we not take more of a patient, I hate to say games-based approach, because it's not all games. A lot of the activities I do, they're not games. They are, most hockey coaches would say you're running drills, but they're game representative, right? They contain elements and fun from the game. Pressure, competition, me against you, us against them. Can we not do more of that? And have children learn the techniques and technical proficiency that will serve them long term, but keep them in the game because now they're passionate and they're enjoying their experience and they always want to come back instead of turning practice into a power skating session and maybe making it unenjoyable for kids, right? Like, it's one thing when you're a triple A junior hockey player. And you're going to a power skating coach. No one goes there for fun. Right? None of those players, none of those players, none of the players do that because they go, oh, it's the most fun thing I do. They go there because they're very committed athletes and they're doing it for their development. It's not that enjoyable. It's very hard work. They'd much rather be out there with pucks and playing and shooting the puck, but they know I gotta fix a problem. I gotta tweak my stride. I've gotta do something to get the edge and move myself along in my career. Do we need to take that and apply it to 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds? I question whether we do. I don't think we do. I think there are other models we can follow and let that stuff fall into the realm of the competitive, committed, driven athlete who is on a path to go somewhere, and those are the tools they use to help them get there.
Brian, you are speaking my language. I was having a conversation with a parent who was kind of a numbskull. And he's like, sometimes I watch your practices and it's like a social club out there. And I was like, the kids are having a blast. They're moving. The kid's got sweat on his face. He wants to come back tomorrow. He's 8 years old. He's having a great time. It's awesome. But I gotta reveal my nerddom real quick for you, Brian. So, and Trevor might know this one. So there's a HBO Max show called Celtic City. Have you watched that at all, Trevor?
I have not catched it yet.
So I've been watching it. It's a pretty good series. It's about the Boston Celtics, but it's I want to watch it because my father-in-law is a Celtics fan and grew up kind of in Boston and things like that. So there's a lot of old footage of the Boston Garden. I was like, I've never been to the Boston Garden. I grew up in New Jersey. So this is like a cool building, and I wanted to see some more stuff of the Boston Garden. So I go on YouTube, and they have like a history of the Boston Garden. It's like a 2-hour special on Nesson or whatever. And I'm watching these old clips from the 30s and 40s, guys who only played on ponds, right, Brian? And those guys could freaking fly. I was blown away how good as skaters. I knew Bobby Orr was a good skater, but that's 60s, 70s. But the guys like Milt Schmidt and the guys in the 30s and 40s were unbelievable skaters skating on these, I mean, primitive boots. I was totally blown away how good as skaters they were. And I had never really seen footage like that of like pre-World War II footage.
Like, if you ask most people, you know, maybe the real young kids won't say it because they don't know, but, you know, for most people who have knowledge of the game of hockey, they will still argue that the greatest defenseman of all time is still Bobby Orr. A guy who grew up in small town Canada, learned to skate on frozen ponds and rivers, played youth hockey growing up, sure, but, you know, I didn't grow up with Bobby Orr, but I'd be willing to bet that Bobby Orr didn't go to power skating classes. And I bet you Bobby Orr didn't have a skills coach. And I bet when Bobby Orr did play minor hockey in his hometown, most of the practices were probably scrimmage-type practices and gameplay with maybe some drills, right? Like, and yet those players from those eras, legends of the game, managed to develop a skillfulness that we still are in awe of today. You know, Wayne Gretzky, the greatest player of all time by most people's standards, basically learned to play on his backyard rink with his dad's help.
You said that concept of finding space, and that's the initial thing that ran off of my head was like, who's the best player of creating space of all time? Is probably Wayne Gretzky. Like the ability to create space and find openings. And then the guy who found space instead of created it, you know, to get pucks to him is probably Ovechkin, right? Like, you know, to find the guy who's almost got 900 goals and is open so often, it's insane.
Yeah, that doesn't take anything away from the tremendously elite skill that we see in the game today. But it does beg the question of, you know, all through the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, that era of player, we're not growing up with what we see in the game today. Skills coach for this, power skating coach for that, you know, taking kids at 5, 6, putting them in programs where they have to get technical proficiency. But still, we continue to talk about those players as being the greats of the game. You know, they managed to do okay growing up in the game, with the game. I think young children today can do equally as well with maybe a different type of programming that is probably more conducive. And I don't want to sound like, you know, all, you know, butterflies and dandelions where, you know, everything is play and playground and fun. That's not what I'm suggesting. I think developing players is important. But I'm just suggesting to a lot of coaches out there now that there are a lot of ways that people can develop motor skill other than teaching them linear, isolated, rote, repetition, 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 repetition. There are a lot of ways, a lot of ways. You know, I did a podcast just a couple of days ago as a guest, and we got into this conversation. And I said, you know, for everybody out there who has children, how did they learn to walk? I had a son. I never sat down with my son an hour a day and said, okay, right foot forward. Now bring it back. Now put it forward. Now bring it back. Put it forward. No, I stood him up on his feet and I let him go. I said, off you go. Walk to mommy. And plop, down he went. And stand up, go again, plop. And eventually he got his balance. He was able to put a foot in front of the other and then another foot. And then it was like, oh, I can move now. And then he got, and then he started to explore. Then he got courageous. I'm going to do it on my own. I'm going to pull myself up on the coffee table. And now I'm going to try to walk without my dad helping, right? Like, that is exploration and discovery, motor learning in its essence. But we put kids on the ice and skates, and we're not comfortable to just let them go and play and learn how to skate. We've got to insert ourselves in this instructional, do this, do this, do this. I think it might be one of the things that is pushing kids out of the game of hockey, to be honest with you.
I agree, Brian. I agree. Now, I got to ask you a question, big one. You got quite a library behind you. What do you recommend?
Oh, Lord.
Well, that actually was gonna,
I got to get my notes question. Out.
Yeah, this is a tough one because the stuff that I've been reading for the last number of years is all around skill acquisition, ecological dynamics, CLA, and it's not easy reading. Like it's not hockey oriented for starters, right? And most of the people that are writing these books are academics, research, PhD type people, and they don't take it easy on the common coach. it's a real dilemma in the area, actually.
Revenge of the Nerd.
Yeah, it's one of the things that pushes people away from it is that it's not easy to understand and read. You know, you start reading some of this and you just kind of go, this is, you know.
If I'm completely honest, I mean, I've seen your discussions on Twitter, and that's how we've obviously, you know, connected. And that's where I'm glad we have you and have you here, because I'm intimidated by all this information. And it's, you know, I, you know, just like Andrew and just like a lot of people listening, we want to become better coaches. And when I see the CLAs and the, you know, the ecodynamical, you know, all that stuff, it's kind of a daunting thing, and it goes against the grain.
It very much is. And it's unfortunate. And that's what I try to do in my coach development stuff, is decipher through all that academia and turn it into simple terminology so that coaches can kind of get a better handle on it, right? But I'll start with Rob Gray's books. So Rob Gray has three books out. His first one was How We Learn to Move, which was really good and pretty easy to read. It wasn't too daunting. Sections of it were. His second book, How We Optimize Movement, was harder to read. Sorry, Rob, if you're listening, but I found that one harder to read myself. Then he just came out with his third one, How to Be an Ecological Coach, which was an unbelievable read. Like, I was 3 months reading that because I kept rereading it and taking notes. Like, it was really interesting for me. I've read a few on, you know, skill acquisition, the dynamics of skill acquisition. What I would say is probably the best thing for me to do is I'll do up a little list and send it to you guys. And then you can throw it in the show notes of your podcast. I'll just say to any listener, if you know, forewarned that, you know, most of these books on CLA, ecological dynamics, constraints-led approach, they for the most part, they're tricky to read, but there's always a chapter or two in every one of these books that is easy to read and understand, and it'll get you a little further along in the understanding. And even I myself, as I'm reading these books, I'll get to a chapter where I'll go, nah, and I'll flip the pages and go, can't understand it. They start getting into the scientific measurements of skill, and I'm like, nope, not interested. Okay, what's the next chapter, right? I'll jump chapters. So it's like pick and choose kind of reading. But yeah, I'll put together a list of some of my better ones, and I'll send it to you guys, let you put it in the show notes for your readers.
Well, and this is all until you write the actual hockey version, correct?
You know, I wish I was a better writer. You have no idea how long it takes me to write those blogs. It takes me, because I write it and I'm happy with it. And then I reread it and go, no, I don't like that. Like, it would take me a lifetime to write a book. But I really would. Like, I would, I'd like to find someone who's a better writer that could just write my thoughts, to take all of that and translate it into something for hockey coaches that they could pick up and go, oh my God, this is so simple. Because it really is. Like, that's the beauty about it, is on the surface, it seems so complicated. But once you get into it and under the covers, it's not, because almost every hockey coach today does something in practice using constraints and using representative learning design. So I could walk into the rink right now and watch either one of you guys run a practice, and I could watch your activities and go, representative learning design, representative learning design. I see constraints. I see constraints. The difference is, constraints-led approach goes beyond just using constraints. It's how you use them and what you do with them and what they provide as an opportunity for the player. So there's a craftiness to designing your constraints to afford your players the decision-making or problem-solving that you kind of want to guide them into. And that's the tricky part. But most coaches have their foot in the door and they don't even realize it, right? So yeah, I'll put some stuff together for you and let you put it in your show notes.
That'd be phenomenal. Fantastic.
Anything else, Trevor, for Brian?
Yeah, I mean, Brian, how do the listeners get in touch with you? And as you said, you know, you're already going to give us all this information in the show notes of books, but are there any other avenues to, outside of, you know, books, that you recommend, you know, looking at or reading or watching, that you would recommend to coaches that want to continue to learn more about this?
Well, I'll give a shameless plug to my Twitter account, or X, I guess, is what I should call it.
There's nothing wrong with that, because it's fantastic and it's filled with a ton of great information.
On Twitter, I'm at BrianGillum66. So that's BrianGillam, as in Mary, 66. And for any coach that's listening that's interested in this stuff, if you just kind of, you know, if you just search my account out and look at the people I'm following, I follow a ton of skill acquisition, ecological dynamics people who are constantly throwing stuff on social media and talking about it and sharing ideas, stuff I tweet myself and repost. On Instagram, I'm not that active on Instagram. And Instagram, oddly enough, doesn't seem to be a platform that's very popular in skill acquisition. On Instagram, I'm BrianHockey66. So Twitter, it's BrianGillum66. Instagram, BrianHockey66. And my website is BrianGillumHockey.com. I've got I call it a blog page there. It's not really a true blog. I just write articles. I write articles for the coach's site. And when I put them on the coach's site, I put them on my site as a blog thing. And I write about these things, about, you know, how to do things from principles, constraints led, ecologically, how to pull away from teaching systems and turn it more into teaching the principles and the skills of the system and whatnot. So yeah, I enjoy doing it, and hopefully it's helpful for coaches. If, like they say, if one coach gets some benefit from it, then I'm happy.
Well, please, please tell me that you entered yourself into the coach's site, contest they were having to present, be a presenter this year.
I did.
And or are we going to have to possibly? No. Oh, well, I don't know how that doesn't work because this right here is, I mean, it's a masterclass. Yep. This is great. Again, all great information.
Yeah, we can't thank you enough, Brian.
Happy to have done it. Anytime, down the road, if you ever want me to jump back on, always available to talk about this stuff and help you guys out, pump your podcast the best I can. So,
no, absolutely. No, we would love to have you again and definitely dive a little bit more into this once we both get our own hockey minds wrapped around it.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks a lot, Brian, for your time, and you have a good night.